This week on a brand new best podcast in baseball, I'm joined by Post-Dispatch baseball writer Daniel Guerrero. We're going to run down the Post-Dispatch dozen of the past year, talk a little bit about what the Cardinals prospects did, and just here on the eve of free agency, we'll discuss maybe a little bit of who the prospects could be for the 2026 PD-12. All right? That's all ahead in a brand new best podcast in baseball. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a best podcast in baseball brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by my colleague, my constant companion there at the ballpark, fellow baseball writer, fellow Post-Dispatch baseball writer, Daniel Guerrero, who he puts together every year the PD-12, the Post-Dispatch dozen. And Daniel, I wanted to take a chance here on the podcast to talk with you about the 12 prospects from this past year's PD-12. But first, why don't you just introduce the concept of the PD-12 that you put together?
Yeah, well, I mean, this goes back to an idea that created, you know, the Post-Dispatch dozen. I mean, that you can obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but before it was seven, right? That you.
Yeah, the Birdland seven. That's right. That's
when,
right.
You know, when in 2022 when STL pinch hits launched, and, you know, the Birdland seven expanded to the Dispatch dozen, which ranks the top.
Which is much better.
It sounds more, it rolls off the tongue smoother, I think. And, you know, Baker's dozen, and or not, I guess that's 13, but maybe that's the next step. There's a Baker's dozen where there's a hint to a 13th prospect to keep.
I like it. Yeah. Or the Guerrero's dozen.
but yeah. So, I mean, obviously this is something that you, really molded, and I've been lucky enough to be able to do the last few seasons. But as you mentioned, it's the ranking of the top 12 prospects in the Cardinal system. Uses, you know, the four P's of prospects, which is position, proximity, potential, and performance, right? Where a lot of times maybe there's a guy who is a top prospect at lower minor league level, but, you know, he's 18, 19 years old and is a few years away, that kind of factors in. Or maybe it's a guy who's, you know, a corner outfielder versus a middle of the order hitter, right? Those are a lot of ways to kind of figure out the deciding, you know, factors in the rankings. And yeah, like you said, this is something that's gone on for the last, you know, since 2022 season. And, you know, this year it was another thing we kept going as a part of that special section, the season preview for the Cardinals that the Post-Dispatch puts out every year before the season begins. And, obviously, it's chock full of a bunch of top prospects, you know, and a lot of guys who kind of rose up in the last year. I mean, some guys who maybe weren't on as many radars, but, you know, they come into the year off of breakout seasons and have strong springs, and that really kind of catapults them up prospect rankings. And this is kind of what we hope to do and kind of give readers and you know, our audience an idea of, okay, who are guys that are going to, you know, nearing the majors, or guys who are, you know, kind of fueling the farm system for the Cardinals. And this is kind of what we hope to put out each season.
You know, one of the things that sets the PD-12 apart from other prospect rankings, like you might find at Baseball America or, you know, some of the other spots like Pipeline, is that if they've been in the majors, they're not eligible. So these are all players in the PD-12 that have not reached the majors, which means Jimmy Crooks, for example, a member of your PD-12 from this past year, has graduated. He won't be in it. Looking at your PD-12, Daniel, we're gonna go player by player through it, but just as a quick kind of preview of it, man, you nailed some of these picks. I mean, you look at like some of the guys you had on this list, and they had strong seasons. One of whom is going to be a very buzzy prospect in the coming year. And of course, then you had the number one overall prospect, who was not the Baseball America Pitcher of the Year this past year, but the Cardinals first round pick from the previous year, JJ Weatherholt. Newsflash, he won't be eligible next year. He'll probably be number one on your 2026 PD 12, but I think that's probably his last
appearance. Yeah, that'll be his last dispatch dozen inclusion. Not because, you know, he's going to – something drastic's going to happen with performance, but because he's pushing his way up to the majors and we'll see him at Busch sooner rather than later.
Well, how did his season go? How did he position himself for the opening day lineup?
Well, I mean, you look at what he does right off the bat, right? He skips a level. He got a taste of the minor leagues and with Palm Beach last year and helped power them to their first Florida State League title since, I think, 2017. Mm-hmm. And really shows well. I mean, you look at not just the baseball card numbers, right, with the batting average and on base percentage and slugging, but you look at the hard hit numbers and, you know, with those metrics available at the single A level, and they stand out. I mean, you look at what he does defensively and he fits right in there at shortstop for Palm Beach, you know, gets a taste of big league camp as a non-roster invitee. And a lot of it was really for him to kind of go through that process of being in big league camp to kind of get that routine, be around the major league staff and a lot of other major leaguers, and comes away with that, takes that to the backfield and earns his spot with Double A Springfield as their starting shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
And really just hits his way through the Texas League. I mean, he had a little bit of a speed bump. I remember talking to him back, I think it was around May, where he had been away from a few, or maybe in late April, but he was away from the lineup for a few games just for illness reasons, and nothing physical that has to do with being on the field. Was just, you know, got a little bit sick there and missed time, and came back with a little bit of a slow return. And mm-hmm. I remember talking to him, and he was just talking about having to really kind of add weight back and just kind of regain his power that he had lost because of being sick. And when he was talking about it, it sounded a lot kind of like what Mookie Betts dealt with the Dodgers this year, where he got sick
interesting.
Overseas and, you know, just kind of, you know, lost some weight and kind of had to gain that back as he got back into games. And then JJ swings his way to being Texas League MVP, begins to play a little bit of shortstop in Springfield, helps that club win the first half of the Texas League and what ended up being an historic season for that affiliate, goes up to Memphis and just keeps on hitting. I mean, keeps on producing hard hit results, gets a little bit of third base under his belt, some innings there that kind of, Chaim Bloom mentioned this after his introductory press conference, is that being kind of something to prepare JJ for whatever comes his way in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at what he's done to position himself for breaking into the majors next year, I mean, just the way he's adapted to pro ball, the way he's succeeded, and the way he's kind of adapted to that versatility aspect, right? Where, you know, the Cardinals are kind of going through this retooling phase. Nolan Arenado is still currently a Cardinal on the roster. They're obviously going to look to deal him this winter. Mason Wynn solidified at second base. You had an all-star. I mean, sorry, Mason Wynn solidified at shortstop as a Gold Glover. You have an all-star second baseman with Brendan Donovan as well. And JJ adds, you know, innings at third base, where he played a lot of in college, but he gets those professional innings under his belt and really kind of position him to break into the majors at whatever kind of opening there might be for him.
What kind of hitter do you think he showed he was at the higher level? I mean, you could make the case that while he was the Texas League MVP, he was a better hitter even at Memphis.
Mm-hmm. I think there, when you look at just kind of the hitting profile, it's it's just strong bat to ball skills. I mean, it's a guy who is able to hit to all fields, and do so with some power, with that hard hit success you want to look for out of a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there could be the possibility of him kind of developing into like 20 home run type guy down the road, as he gets more refined and gets stronger as he comes up through the minors, as he nears the majors, really. I mean, he's kind of already made that rise, but I mean, I think you're looking at a guy who, is just going to give you quality at bats, who's going to put the ball in play and hit it hard. And that's kind of, you don't really see a whole lot of like selling out to get that power. You just kind of seen it develop naturally with him.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
He was number one on your PD-12. Number two was Lefty Quinn Matthews, the aforementioned Baseball America Pitcher of the Year from all levels of base of the minors in 2024. Also struck out 200 batters in 2024, but encountered injury trouble. Had a year lost basically to injury. Where does this put Quinn Matthews, and what's next for him?
Yeah, this puts Quinn, I mean, you mentioned the injury loss, dealt with the shoulder injury, was kept under 100 innings as a whole, and I think 94 of his 99 innings came in AAA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then once he kind of got fully going there in the second half, there were some command issues. Look at the strikeout to walk ratio, and I think it was past triple digits in strikeouts, but also was like around 74 walks on the year.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously, you know, him coming off that breakout season, leading the minors in strikeouts, the walks really, really were an issue. But when you look at next year and you look at kind of how that big league rotation could shape up over the winter, I think we're kind of in a spot where Quinn's kind of in a spot where they might not rush him up to the majors too soon. I mean, and Chaim Bloom did talk about this after, as I mentioned earlier, the introductory press conference, where he talked a lot about undercooking prospects and bringing them to the majors. Yeah. Because of just there being a need and just there being somebody who you need to take innings. I think Quinn Matthews kind of fits that bucket of guys who I don't think the Cardinals might rush up to the majors because there's a spot open and they need somebody to take the ball once every 5 days. I think this is a guy who could get a little bit more seasoning down in Memphis, and then when the timing's right and there's a spot open in the rotation, can kind of come in and grow into that role at the major league level.
What do you expect from – do you think what he did when he returned set him up pretty well? Do you think, like – I know he – like you said, he had some troubles coming back, but do you think, like, ultimately that set him up better for 2026?
Yeah, I think so, because I think especially coming into last year, right, where he makes this rapid rise up the minor league, up the minors, mm-hmm. Yeah. Pitches at every full season affiliate, and really only had a handful of starts in Memphis, right? I think he was under 16 innings. So, I mean, it really did feel like, you know, even though he kind of came into last year's spring training as a non-roster invitee, kind of pushing his way up to the major league level, there was still going to be this time. I mean, it just made sense that there was going to be this time that he needed in Memphis to get more innings. And I think him coming back from injury and kind of getting deeper into starts down the stretch for Memphis sets him up really to kind of continue to build off in that point and kind of continue taking those steps forward for him to kind of get the proper time to develop and kind of proper setting to mm-hmm. develop before he's put into the major league rotation.
Number three on your PD-12 was probably the most impressive young pitcher we saw in spring training, and that's right-hander Tekoa Roby, who just has he is a modern day fastball starter prospect, but he had Tommy John, and mm-hmm. he is likely to miss most, if not all, of 2026. The Cardinals have him on the 40-man. They're going to protect him. They're not going to lose that talent that he has, but it is going to be a year of rehab for him.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and you mentioned that spring training. I mean, when he got into those major league games, I mean, you kind of started to see the caliber of prospect that we hadn't really seen out of Tekoa in the last mm-hmm. couple of years, because he came over from that the Rangers system and that Jordan Montgomery trade, right. You know, back in 2023, and he was injured and kind of had a rebuild, and we didn't see a whole lot of him as well in 2024 as he dealt with injury. And you did see, like, okay, the power stuff there, the breaking ball and just his ability to command it is there, and had a good start in Springfield, gets up to Memphis and, you know, unfortunately gets, you know, sidelined by injury for an extended amount of time. And I mean, this is a guy who I think was really on in ascent. I mean, kind of rising up the system with 40-man status already, where, you know, if he could pitch his way up into the majors, if a spot opened up, and just unfortunately injury cut those opportunities short this year and kind of have delayed his ETA to the majors.
Number four on your list, another right-handed pitcher who's dealt with some injury, is Tink Hentz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another guy who just haven't seen a full season out of him yet. And when you look at the potential, and that's kind of a big thing with him, where you look at his pitchability, just the different ways he can beat you. I mean, if you can get that out of a starter, I mean, this is a guy who has frontline starter potential because of just the way, just how talented he is. But unfortunately, he hasn't been able to stay on the field as much. I mean, in this year, another year where just had a little bit of start and stop with injury before he, mm-hmm. you know, just wasn't able to return. Bloom also touched on this back in beginning of October, end of September, that, you know, there were some mechanical things that they're looking for at a Tink over the offseason mm-hmm. that he'll work on to not only help him take on the, you know, the workload he needs to take on, but also kind of help him in, I'll just continue to improve in just terms of how effective he can be as a pitcher. You know, this was what he made his minor league debut in 2022, if I'm not mistaken. And it's gotten up to double A now, and you're kind of getting that sense, like, okay, with kind of the injuries he's dealt with over the years, you know, kind of what does the trajectory look like for Tink? And as of now, I don't think the Cardinals are at that point yet where they're going to decide, okay, if he's going to stay on a starter track or be a reliever, but I think they just want to see him healthy and see what he can do after kind of focusing the winter on making some changes and kind of taking on that workload next year.
Do you have an opinion as to whether he sticks as a starter or goes to a reliever? Are you at all intrigued by that decision and what way it might go?
Right. I mean, it's a really intriguing one because, I mean, the value for a lot of pitchers is being a starter. I mean, if you're a guy who can take the ball every 5 days and give your team 6-plus innings and, you know, quality starts. I mean, we look at this last World Series, right, and saw the power mm-hmm. of starting pitching. I mean, see how valuable it is where guys coming out of the bullpen are starting pitchers and in these pivotal innings. And that's not a slight to relievers. I think there are a lot of guys who have a ton of value as relievers, but if you can develop a frontline starter, when you look across the majors at, you know, what contending teams are, you know, are rolling out there, I mean, that is a big thing. And I think Tink Hentz isn't a really intriguing arm. And I think if you can keep him on that starter track and see if it works out there, I think you got to do it until, you know, and I guess until the last resort.
Yeah, I mean, they have to think about, like, what can his body handle, too? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of, like, just stuff, excellent electric stuff. Mm-hmm. He's very athletic, but it also is – it's asking a lot of his body to produce that stuff. Mm-hmm. So can he stay healthier by dialing it back a little bit? But then is he less effective? Or is he more effective in shorter bursts? And, you know, there's no real easy answer there. And there is no like umbrella answer there. It's really going to be individualized with Tink and where he kind of part of it is where he feels most comfortable. Part of it is where he can perform at his best. And they're going to have to try to find that. You know, it's very interesting. I mean, he could be a lightning bolt at some point in time, you know, in the majors this year, maybe as much as any of these pitchers that we're going to discuss. He could come soaring out of the minors to really make a show of it. It's just like you kind of outlined how best to keep that him effective, healthy mm-hmm. and channel that excellent stuff. I mean, if you were to look at this group, I mean, you might say Roby's fastball is the best, but you wouldn't get very far before saying Tink Hentz has mm-hmm. the best stuff of anyone in the PD-12, right?
Yeah. I mean, And really, like when we talked about I mean, when you look at stuff and you look at potential, I mean, his stuff, you could argue is the top stuff in the system. Yeah. I just think the, you know, performance and just not being able to stay on the field really kind of hurts him there in terms of being able to see that stuff. But yeah, when you look at the overall pitch mix that he has, and I think also when you look at the pitchability and him knowing mm-hmm. and how to use that, I think you do see that top starter that you want to see developing in the system.
Number five is the first of three catchers on the PD-12. It's also the only member of the 2025 PD-12 to graduate. That is, of course, Jimmy Crooks, catcher who made to the majors late in the year. Had to be protected this year, so he's on the roster. He's going to be on the roster. He's a Texas League MVP. Lots to like about what he did at AA, then what he kind of added to his game at AAA. There's more offense to be had from him. That'll develop there. What'd you make of Jimmy Crooks's year that ended up in St. Louis?
I think the thing that stands out is really how he, for a guy that young, for a guy who was fresh to the majors, just hearing some of the things that like manager Ollie Marmol talked about in the sense of Jimmy's preparation, Jimmy's kind of quiet nature behind the plate where there's nothing really like startling, where like it kind of worries you. It's kind of this calming presence. It's somebody who came into meetings, pitchers meetings prepared, you mm-hmm. know, and I think a lot of that goes back to kind of what some of the changes you're seeing in player development with the Cardinals and sort of the catchers and allowing Jimmy to kind of, I guess, take on that layer of development down in Memphis where he was the primary catcher and kind of leading that catching room and kind of having that comfort of being up in the majors and not really like hesitating or second guessing or being afraid to speak up, you know, when you're game planning or when you're prepping for a start or you're in these meetings where he, you know, is confident in knowing, okay, these are the things that he knows he has to prepare for. These are the things that he's going to communicate well with the pitching staff. And for a guy that young, for a guy who worked with some younger arms like Michael McGreevy, to a guy who worked with more veteran arms, to a guy who worked with, you know, different players in the bullpen, to be that young in the majors and to be able to communicate those things that well and be as prepared as he did, I think that is a solid, really layer development for the guy who came into the year as a top ranked catcher in the Cardinals system.
How do you expect the catching to sort out here in the early days of 2026? You know, the Cardinals, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you could argue that they have what, five catchers on their 40-man roster at the moment, right? You know, Wilson mm-hmm. Contreras is a first baseman, so maybe he moves off, but still, you know, Ivan Herrera wants to catch and had surgery to alleviate some pain and some loose bodies in his elbow so that he can rehab and get the arm strength necessary there to catch. Then you got the two gentlemen who had the role for a lot of the year, and Pedro Páez and Joel Pozo, and Jimmy Crooks joins the group. They're all there on the 40, man. How does this sort out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would look at it also as like I haven't really considered Wilson a catcher just because we didn't.
Sure.
I mean, I guess emergency catcher just because we didn't see.
Yeah. No, I was just kind of being cute there. I mean.
Yeah, I get you. No, but I get it though. Where he's somebody who is an option if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I guess if we're, I mean, I know we're past election day for places across the country, but you know, if we're looking at kind of a lead horse in this race, I mean, Ivan Herrera kind of is positioned as such. Because you look at, obviously he comes into this past season winning the job at a spring training, and is an opening day starting catcher. And I think you look at what he is able to do offensively
mm-hmm.
out of that position. Yeah. And you think about, okay, well, if we can kind of make those improvements defensively, right, where he had, you know, acknowledged the arm injury and they had it addressed over this winter with the surgery. And he's, you know, already rehabbing that. He's on this off-season program with the throwing program, with a program to help him improve with game calling. So I think he's sort of the guy who you look at as first in the pecking order coming into 2026.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, that's still kind of a question mark because you want to see what that's going to look like in spring, right? This is, if everything goes to plan, Ivan Herrera is, you know, possibly your starting catcher, brings this added value offensively from the position that you really don't see across the league as much because it's such a demanding position. But yeah, but you look at the depth and Pedro Páez is that defensive first catcher, and Ollie has talked about, you know, having a strong defender behind the plate is kind of being a key part to defense. Jimmy Crooks races up to the majors this year and makes some nice impressions. Yoel Pozo also, in a really limited role, showed he could bring value, whether that was with catching and working with the staff or coming off the bench and being able to hit, and that just being another aspect of his game. And then even if you fast forward to December and kind of what another catcher might enter the chat on the 40-man roster, who we'll talk about, I imagine we'll talk about later, but with Leonardo Bernal needing 40-man roster status to be protected from the Rule 5 draft. And I mean, you look at next year and you have this sort of, smorgasbord of catchers, you know, these two guys who are racing up the system, pushing their way to the majors. So, I mean, it's an area where the Cardinals have a lot of depth from, and kind of we'll see how that shapes up over the winter. But you look at next year, and I think you kind of come into the year with kind of Yvonne possibly being the guy who's gonna get first priority there.
The first five players, prospects on your PD-12, all have had at least some experience in AAA. When you get to number six, you're going to the other extreme, one of the youngest talents in the system, and that's Yairo Padilla. Infielder, shortstop. What kind of year did he have? He obviously was a bit of a sensation when he got a chance to play at Roger Dean Stadium on a telecast game. But where did his year go from there?
Just in the complex league. I mean, I in the lower minors at that level, he had a very limited year in terms of games played. And I think for a guy that young, that might be something that you typically see when they transition stateside. He had a standout year in the Dominican Summer League, and really just kind of catapulted up rankings and kind of onto, you know, this kind of prospect consciousness, right, of a guy to be aware of. And I think just a big part of this year for him was just kind of building routines and kind of being kind of assimilating to okay, what this next level of professional baseball looks like. I know that's a big part of the Dominican Summer League. And getting guys into routine, getting guys kind of accustomed to the grind of being a pro. And I think that was just a big part of development for him this year, right? Where he's, this switch hitting shortstop, still a teenager. But you look at kind of what this year could offer. And I think that was just a big part of him just getting accustomed to being in a new environment and seeing kind of a wider array of talent that he's playing with and against.
What kind of player is he, Daniel? Can you kind of give, like, you know, a brief scouting report on him for folks?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at him defensively, it's a guy who I know the Cardinals had a lot of intrigue in, just kind of with smooth actions at shortstop. You know, has the size and kind of has the some of the tools you look for to handle that position. I think one of the things that stands out as far as like an intangible, I guess, kind of a quality to him that was described to me earlier this year, where he's a very aggressive type player and aggressive in terms of, I guess, like level of competitiveness. I'm not like saying aggressive in the, like the style or, you know, the way he swings and his swing decisions. But I think when you look at just some of the personality from him when he's on the field, I think you have this competitive kind of aggressive, just player, just this individual who is going to give you what he has. I mean, it's somebody who I think you look at as kind of a I don't want to necessarily say like a grinder, but just in terms of somebody who's going to give you, you know, everything he has once he steps in between those lines.
We're halfway through the PD-12 and we arrive at number seven, a former first round pick, lefty, had a high strikeout rate, was really maybe the first signal of the Cardinals veering in that direction when it came to some of their draft picks, looking at that higher strikeout rate, looking at pitchers who miss bats more, but also being aware that some of them might be a little bit more of a project than other prospects or other starters coming out of college. He did come out of college. Of course, I'm talking about Cooper Jerpy, a lefty who lost season to injury. Another guy there. He has to be protected this year from the Rule 5 draft. Presents a really interesting question for the Cardinals, who obviously have a lot invested in him because he's a former first-round pick. Where is Jerpy at now? Where does he factor in for 2026?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big decision for the winner. As you mentioned, needs that Rule 5 protection. He needs a 40-man roster spot to avoid being drafted in the Rule 5 draft this December. But I mean, I think when you look at just sort of that potential, I mean, this is a guy who I think kind of in a way is a little bit has the same kind of question that we discussed with Tin Cans, where, you know, this is a guy who's come up as a starter, but because of injury and also because of just sort of the makeup and just kind of the nature of his success on the mound, you kind of wonder like, okay, maybe is a relief option or a relief role an option down the line. And I think obviously step one right now is going through rehab and kind of, you know, seeing what he can do when he gets back on the field. But I think, you know, if he's in the Cardinals system next year and, you know, nobody takes a flyer on, you know, if he doesn't get protected and if there's a team that takes a flyer on somebody in the rehab process, which has happened before in Rule 5 drafts, you know, this is a guy who I think once healthy, there's going to be a ramp up to get innings. And I think that's when we're going to see, okay, just what role is he kind of destined for, you know, once he's back on the mound, because he does, like you mentioned, have the swing and miss stuff, really has, I mean, and you know, we see relievers sometimes it's just kind of 2-3 pitches. He has that to be an effective reliever, especially with his breaking pitch mix. But again, I mean, there's a lot of value in being a starter. But you know, he's lost a couple of seasons to injury. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, the Cardinals invested a lot in him with him being a first round pick. And I think he's a guy who could perform really well in shorter spurts, but also just doesn't would need a good amount of innings to stay on that starter track, because we just haven't seen him on the mound in a starting role as much as you'd like to see him in.
There's a little bit of a real interesting strategy element here. If you're the Cardinals, you want to protect Cooper Jerpy because you have the time invested, the first round pick invested, the money invested. But you also may want to keep another team from having just basically a free Rule 5 pick, because one of the things that's really easy to do in the Rule 5 is keep a player on the injured list all year and have some kind of control over them, especially with the way that Jerpy's rehab and recovery, how it lines up. You know, they pick him, if the team picks him in the Rule 5, he goes on the injured list. He's going to spend a lot of that time on the injured list. He goes off on a rehab assignment. Then he comes back and gets a few innings later in the year, either when rosters expand or when he's ready to go. And all of a sudden, then now you have control of him. A little different spot for the Cardinals, because they have to commit that spot to him here. And that may mean that they have to choose him above somebody else for the 40-player roster. But, you know, you leave him exposed, you're almost giving an invitation to a team that wants to just buy a year without the problem of having to reserve a roster spot for him, because he'll be doing the rehab. So, really interesting situation that you got to see. You have to believe that the Cardinals are going to protect him just because of that risk. It would be really interesting if they don't. Because another team could just take him and stash him for a while. Number eight, Gold Glove winner, Daniel. Leonardo Bernal spent the year AA Springfield, won a Gold Glove for catcher in the minor leagues. Rawlings gives out a Gold Glove there, but it's a little different than the American and National League. There is only one. For all of the catchers in all of the minor leagues, through all of the organizations, only one wins a Gold Glove, not two like in the majors. And Leonardo Bernal did. What is the scouting report on Leonardo Bernal, who also has to be protected and also obviously will be protected on the 40-player roster?
Right. I mean, look at Bernal and just kind of think, here's a guy who, just for his age, I mean, is just mature, just understands the game, understands how to slow down the game for his pitching staff. I think when you look at obviously the offensive side, average kind of dipped down this year, but his on-base percentage kind of stayed the same because of his ability to take walks when they came to him. OPS, same thing, around kind of that 720 range. But you look at overall, I mean, there's a lot of strength in his defense, right? Where with in his success in controlling the run game, in his ability to work with the pitching staff. I think you look down at Springfield this year and you look at the success they had, and his fingerprints are all over that.
Yeah.
You look at the starting rotation, and a lot of credit to that starting rotation and that entire pitching staff for doing what they did this year and leading the Texas League in ERA.
Great point.
But I mean, there's one guy who caught a lot of those innings, and I think Bernal had a, you know, kind of has that ability to work with the staff and be able to navigate games and kind of calm things when situations get busy. I think you look at their Texas League title run this year, and I think you see Bernal's influence in some of those games, even though the box score might not show it, right? Where you look at the batting average and OPS after that playoff run, and it might not stand out, but I mean, he came through in game two, you know, when the series shifted to on the road, and has this huge triple off the wall to pad a lead in a do or die game. You know, and the next night he all, you know, continues to kind of help that pitching staff navigate. That same night after the triple, you know, works, helps the pitching staff kind of navigate a really close game and extending their season. And they come out the next night and just kind of, you know, just offense just opens up and they win the Texas League title. But yeah, you look at Leonardo Bernal and you look at the overall kind of completeness of his games, I would say. And there's a lot to like there. There's a lot to like from a guy who's that young too, who's still 21 years old.
Who has
sort of like, I would call it just a steady rise up the minors, because in 2022, he gets a full season down in Palm Beach. 23, he gets a full season down in Peoria before he joins Springfield at the end of September, or in September, for the Texas League playoff run that year. And then comes into Springfield this year and just really does well in being their primary catcher. And there's not a lot offensively that you might say like, oh man, this just jumped out, but there's a lot to like in terms of just the complete package of his game on the offensive and defensive side. And that's rewarded with the Gold Glove award for, like you said, there's only 9 players across the minor leagues who get Gold Gloves, and he was one of them.
I am always astounded by how young Bernal is, because when you go and see him play and see him catch and everything like that, he has the look of a guy who's been doing it a lot longer. Like you would go, just the size of him, the way he moves, you know, his actions, all that stuff. You go, man, that's a guy who is very comfortable and has a lot of years in the majors. And then you find out, no, that he's 21.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really, it's really remarkable. So Leonardo Bernal, the second catcher in your 12, he's at number 8. That brings us to number 9. An outfielder. There's an outfielder in the top 9, Daniel.
Right.
That is former first-round pick Chase Davis. He of the Carlos Gonzalez swing and Carlos Gonzalez comparison. But what happened to him with this season?
Just strikeout rate just rose. I think it was around was it maybe like 28% staying in Springfield? The average and power, so the average and slugging percentage both kind of dipped. On base percentage rose because of his ability to take walks as well. Okay. Look at just kind of the just the swing decisions, just his ability to recognize pitches. I mean, and I think a lot of that comes from having that background as a college product at University of Arizona, and just being a little bit more mature in that sense with his development at the plate, with his vision and his discipline. But just some swing and miss just kind of hurt him this year in terms of being able to produce offensively. He played a lot of center field for Springfield. There's obviously a possibility he moves to the corner outfield spots, especially with the strong throwing arm. But then you kind of begin to think, well, if he play, you know, fits into right field or left field, or just, I mean, just finds a corner spot. Obviously, you're going to want to see a little bit more power production from that. Mm-hmm. And I think just kind of cutting down on swing and miss will be a big, big step for him moving forward. And just being able to kind of take that next step in his development as a hitter. And you know, there's hitters in the major league level who swing and miss a lot, but mm-hmm. Strike out a lot, but that comes with some power. And I just don't think we saw that this year with Chase and what was his, you know, second full season in the minors.
Yeah, that's the part of it that I'm real interested in, Daniel. I'd love to get your insight on that, right? So double A, second full season. What's the best spot for him this coming year? Do you think mm-hmm. does a return to the Texas League make sense? Because he's still accumulating experience and he's still younger than the level. Does he go to AAA to continue that rise and see what happens? I mean, where's the best fit for him after a season like this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think returning to the Texas League in AA would be looked at as like a bad thing, as you mentioned. I think this is something that when you come into spring next year and just see how the type of hitter he comes in as and some of the things that, you know, that he's worked on over the offseason, you kind of get a better sense of what he's going to – where he's going to start the year. But, I don't think staying in Springfield for just a little bit longer for a few more at-bats does any harm. And in reality, I think there's a benefit to that, as you said, where he's still building comfort, still gaining at-bats as a professional, you know, baseball player, where I think you kind of do that and allow him to kind of find a groove there. Mm-hmm. I think that can be a positive for him. I mean, when you look at kind of long-term development and not rushing a guy up to the minor or up the system, which I wouldn't also say it's a rush, but I mean, I just feel like you kind of want to see a little bit more out of him offensively in AA before he gets that promotion to Memphis.
All right. Number 10 in your PD12 is currently out in the Arizona Fall League where he's mm-hmm. pitching. It's Chen Wei Lin. What can you tell us about? I'm just a fascinating talent. So tell me more about what he did this season and what they hope to get from him out in the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah. Well, I think kind of what they hope to get out of him is what maybe we didn't see this season. And I think that's just innings. Mm-hmm. Was held back this year a couple times on the IL, finished with, I think, around 50 innings. With that coming, you know, in Palm Beach, Peoria, and Springfield at the end of the year. So he did get a kind of a taste of facing different hitters and more advanced hitters, pitching in different environments like the, mm-hmm. like the playoffs. And I think, one, you're going to want to see innings from him in the Fall League. And two, you're just going to want to see him kind of hone in on that command. Because like you mentioned, he's a very intriguing player in terms of also stuff. I mean, when you talk about, I guess, like fastballs in the system, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, is kind of a dark horse candidate. I mean, it touches triple digits, comes at you from a 6'7" frame. So he has that, you know.
Yeah, he's lean. He's got a frame that's going to add size.
Right.
Strength. He's still really young. It's got a lot of ride on that fastball.
Yeah. And it's a, I remember even talking to a couple guys in the system a couple years. I remember Joshua Baez was one of them where, you know, we talked about just kind of the angle that it comes at you, the extension that he has, you know, and just the size and the speed and all of that combined makes it a tough pitch to see.
Yeah.
Tough pitch to hit.
A perceived velocity of 412.
Right.
With him reaching when they're coming out of his finger.
And yeah, I mean, this is a right-hander who's been on a starter's track since he, as of last year, I mean, showed well in Palm Beach. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the fastball. I mean, the changeup can get him a lot of swing and miss. I mean, that's one of his, that's probably his best off-speed or second best secondary pitch. But you look at what you want to see from him in the Fall League. And I think that's just to continue to build innings, continue to pitch just in command of his stuff. He showed that in the first couple of Fall League outings. Mm-hmm. The last two just kind of walks and just the lack of command have hurt him. But I mean, this is a 23-year-old who's still pretty new to pro ball and has a lot of upside when it comes to just the type of pitcher he can be.
Yeah, there's a real chance that he takes the Arizona Fall League and slingshots it into some looks in spring, not to like catapult in the majors, not all that stuff, but just among like the young players coming to spring training on an NRI to kind of get a look, you know, from the major league staff and sort of give them an early peek at what's ahead and also give him that first look at what a major league spring training looks like. I think that'd be really, I mean, if he does well in Arizona and all things are healthy, I would not be surprised at all if he's a bit of a prospect showcase guy where we get a look at him in spring training with the big league team.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things, right? Where, like you said, it's not going to catapult him into the major league, into the major leagues. He still needs, there's still a lot of innings he'll need to build up. But I think, like you said, it catapults him to kind of being on that forefront of getting priority innings.
Yeah, great way to put it.
That's kind of the way I would look at it, right? Where he's not just the guy in a rotation, but like he's the guy in that minor league rotation that you want to see him not just give you innings, but give you quality innings.
Number 11 on your list is another catcher. It's the third catcher. And let me ask you this. If it weren't for J.J. Weatherholt, would this young prospect be the player of the year in the Cardinals organization?
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, there's certainly a case for that. I guess it's, yeah, I mean, I think some of it also depends on the level they played at.
Sure.
You think,
sure.
All
right, tell us, make the case for Raniel Rodriguez, yeah, who might just be the most hitterish upside guy of the group, and he plays catcher. And right, he's super young. He's 4 years younger than the level he was at. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, he was 18 in Palm Beach and then got, about a week's worth of games in Peoria and High A.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at, like you said, just a hitter. I mean, obviously a catcher, and, there's a little bit of some questions in terms of, just kind of some defensive stuff, especially with controlling the run game there. But when you look at what he does as a hitter, right, and you look at especially what you can get out of him offensively at that position, and it really just gives you a lot of excitement, right, and kind of seeing what this catching prospect can develop into. Tied for the organization lead in homers at 20 with Joshua Baez, led the organization in slugging percentage at, with the .555 slugging percentage, which was, among, I can't remember the exact number of plate appearances, but you look at hitters across the minors and he ranks in that kind of echelon of slugging percentage. And same thing with J.J. Weatherholt, when you talk about the hard hit success. I mean, this is a guy who was just crushing the ball down in Palm Beach. Had a strong Dominican Summer League last year in his first postseason.
Yeah.
Plays stateside and just takes off in the Florida Complex League, carries that into the Florida State League with Palm Beach and works his way up to getting a promotion to Peoria, which, again, this is something that just kind of gives him a reward at the end of the year, kind of a new setting, kind of gets his feet wet for kind of what could be a 2026 where he continues to build off of that and continues to rise up the minors.
Do you think this is a big year for him as a catcher coming up?
I think so. I think because we've seen, what the bat can look like, and I think that, when you begin to look at, long-term landing spot and what he can be for you, I think taking that next step defensively is definitely a key, because, if you're a bat and you can hit, they're going to find a spot for you in the lineup. Now, I think this is a year where you can kind of solidify, this is where your spot is going to be in the lineup, if that's going to be behind the plate.
Yeah, interesting. All right, number 12 on the list of the Post-Dispatch Dozen, the final prospect from your list here for 2025, was the headliner from their international signing period, It now shifts every, I just remind everybody, the international signing period now goes January to January. It used to go to from July to July. It's moved a little bit, or moved a lot, but to coincide with the calendar, basically. So we're almost a year ago, they signed Royal Stroop, Pedro Stroop's son, who you probably know from the Cubs bullpen. How'd he do? Very young, very early on. You know, a guy who has tremendous athleticism. Obviously, his father played for a while. His father was pretty funny about on the day when he signed with when his son signed with the Cardinals, wearing his Cubs World Series ring to the event. But what kind of year did he have? But more so, really, what can be expected from him?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't look into too much of what the year is like in the Dominican Summer League. Kind of had a couple of slow first weeks and then strong finish there. But when you look at what can be expected, right? I mean, it's this left-handed hitting teenager. I think he's still 17 years old.
Yeah, he was one of the youngest signees.
Mm-hmm. And I think you look at kind of where he can develop in terms of power. I think that's kind of one of the areas of intrigue where he can, some kind of scouts believe that he can develop that into kind of above average power. Some of the things you can kind of, when you kind of look into him and you kind of get a better sense of what he offers at the plate. I think there are some aspects of a more mature and advanced kind of a approach when it comes to like bat to ball skills. Mm-hmm. But obviously, like you said, 17-year-old outfielder, a guy who was a headline signee last year, somebody who really, like we mentioned earlier with the Dominican Summer League guys, is kind of just going through the early stages of getting accustomed to professional baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, 16, 17 years old, these are guys who would be in high school stateside. There's a lot of just kind of getting a guy accustomed to what it's like to be a professional baseball player. And, this somebody who has kind of the pedigree in terms of just for kind of upbringing, mm-hmm. of knowing what it takes to be in the majors, knowing what it takes to be a player on a winning team in the majors. And I think there are aspects of his game that, kind of intrigue, but we really won't see much of that, I guess, until, he gets a little bit older, kind of climbs up the system and kind of starts seeing him more. Once he makes the leap stateside and kind of gets his feet wet in the lower minor levels.
He has a real strong defensive reputation, right? Like, mm-hmm. Or is that right? Or is a lot of that based on just athleticism that he has the strong defensive reputation?
Yeah, no, I think there's a good foundation there, especially as playing center field or.
Yeah. Premium position, premium.
Right. Player. I mean, obviously, that takes a lot of athleticism, but I think there's a strong tool set there for him to continue to man that position.
That's the PD-12, the PD dozen, the post-dispatch dozen. It's the ranking of the top 12 prospects in the Cardinals organization who have yet to reach the majors. One graduate from the 12, that's Jimmy Crooks. The number one player overall in the PD-12 is J.J. Weatherholt. He undoubtedly returns as the number one for the PD-12 in 2026. But otherwise, there's going to be some movement there, Daniel. Can you give me a peek into what you expect in the 2026 PD-12?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, J.J. Weatherholt, spoiler alert, is going to be the number one prospect. I mean, he's not only a top prospect in the system, but one of the top prospects in all of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, look at Liam Doyle's inclusion next year. I mean, comes in as, fifth overall pick in last year's draft, the standout college pitcher in this winning program, who's just has electric stuff as well, has this kind of really, really intriguing character and kind of makeup on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's a big part of just kind of a guy's development in terms of makeup and just kind of being in that moment and kind of rising up to that. We've seen that with him at the college level.
Think he might debut at number two?
That, I mean, makes a strong case for it. I mean, it's hard to say no. I think the only like thing you look at is kind of like the, okay, what about this? I mean, just, we haven't seen him in pro ball yet, but I think pitching in the SEC, pitching in the college World Series and kind of in those environments gives you a sense of like, okay, what this guy can be.
Yeah. Pitching for the future Giants manager.
Right. But yeah, but I mean, obviously that's a guy who you can expect to see high up there next year. Mm-hmm. I think a guy who really catapulted himself back onto this list and back onto a lot of prospect radars, who, when we were talking about if JJ isn't the player of the year in the system, who is, and obviously Reinel makes a strong case, but I also think Joshua Baez makes a
really strong case. Yeah, good call. Good call, Daniel.
And,
yeah.
I think a big part of that, I mean, it's really, you think about it, this guy was drafted out of high school, you know, decided to turn pro instead of going to Vanderbilt, and came in a pro ball, 18, 19 years old, at the lower minors. This really, you know, just kind of like raw hitter who's matured on the field and off the field. I mean, not that, you know, he was immature off the field, but, you know, like you kind of get a sense, like talking to him, like he knows what it's going to take to be at the major league level. He knows how patient he has to be. And you look at the year he had after, you know, swing and miss really defined what kind of he looked like. And he dealt with a couple of injuries, and I remember that first year. But you look at – or it was just one injury with the hamate bone. But you look at, okay, him kind of staying healthy on the field. I mean, not that health has ever been a problem. But you look at his ability to cut down the swing and miss, his ability to run the bases, his ability to field his position, whether that's in center or right. And really, it was just a really strong year. I mean, had a 2050 season. There's only one other player in minor league baseball outside of Joshua Baez that had 20 homers and 50 or more stolen bases. And that was a Connor Griffin from the Pirates system, who's the number one prospect in all of baseball.
Good call.
And you just, yeah, you just look at what the year he had and him being able to showcase all the, like all the tools he has. I mean, that's what we've heard about this guy, that he's a guy with a lot of different tool sets. I mean, he's a guy who super strong arm as an outfielder, has some raw power that he can grow into, you know, can run the bases. And now that he showed that he can do all of that and hit for contact and also, you know, cut down that strikeout rate. I mean, that's big, especially for a system that really hasn't had a lot of right-handed hitting outfielders come through it. And he's a guy who's going to require 40-man roster protection to avoid being Rule 5 eligible. And, yeah, he's a guy who comes in next year really off a strong year, but also, you know, has had this really notable season that, you know, could, you know, if not for JJ Weatherholt, could make him player of the year.
Great point. I love that. Yeah, he's going to go on the 40-player. The Cardinals are going to protect him, of course. That means he's going to come to spring training. He's going to get a look there. And I had one evaluator with another team that I talked to who was talking about how, you know, the Cardinals and Jordan Walker and where they're at trying to get the most from him, that the right fielder of their future may actually be Josh Baez and not Jordan Walker, and that he might be the player that makes, you know, kind of reaches all the promise that was expected from Jordan Walker. We'll see. That's high praise for sure. But, you know, some of that comes down to, like you were saying, the swing and miss. It was swing and miss on pitches in the zone. So he had a command of the zone despite pretty limited experience playing baseball coming out of Boston like he did. But there's a lot to like about, you know, just what he did this year was very impressive. It speaks to the importance of being patient at times with prospects. You know, they could have had prospect fatigue with him. They could have moved on. They could have not looked at it, and they would have missed what was a remarkable season. I'm so glad you brought it up. I'm going to put you on the spot, Daniel. Do you have sort of a sleeper pick for who might crack your PD12 for 2026?
I mean, I guess there are a couple pitchers that come to mind.
Okay.
Eshon Henderson, I don't think you can really ignore.
Yeah.
Texas League Pitcher of the Year, has a strong case to be the Cardinals Minor League Pitcher of the Year as well.
Good call.
But I think the one that also is very intriguing, because of the stuff, because of the background, I don't know what the role is going to look like, but I think Tanner Franklin.
You took my guy.
Is a very intriguing. See, I could read your mind. I'm like Professor.
Yeah.
Oh, well, but I mean, just the guy with the triple digits fastball pitched in college. I know you've reported that, you know, the Cardinals are going to give him a possibility, a chance to develop as a starter and get innings that way.
Yeah.
I think even if you look at somebody who can rise quickly through the system, if it's in a shorter burst role, I mean, he kind of fits that mold. Fits a mold of a guy who can be an impact arm out of a bullpen or, you know, as a starter if he develops as such.
Yeah. Very good call. I'm intrigued. I wonder if he might make your PD12. You know, as you put it together for 2026, it sure seems like it's right to aggressively rank Josh Baez, but it might be right to kind of slip in the Tanner Franklin so that at the end of the year or next year, 12 months from now, when we're doing this same podcast, you can take a hearty, "I told you so."
We'll say we told you so.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Thanks for that. We'll say we told you so. That's Daniel Guerrero, baseball writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Every year he puts together the Post-Dispatch Dozen. That's the ranking of the top dozen prospects in the Cardinals organization who have yet to reach the majors. One of them already reached St. Louis this year. That's Jimmy Crooks. Number one on the list is headed for St. Louis in 2026. That, of course, is J.J. Weatherholt. And his possible number two could be in St. Louis in 2026 too with Liam Doyle. So, you know, proximity to the majors is one of the things that Daniel looks at. Daniel, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been great, man. This is, I learned a lot and I really appreciate you taking us through one by one of these prospects.
Yeah, no, thank you for the invite. Happy to join the pod.
You can find all of Daniel's work as part of our constant Cardinals coverage there at STL Today and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcast. It's brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. For baseball writer Daniel Guerrero, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. Thanks again, Daniel. It's great. He gives a thumbs up.
Oh, I wasn't sure if that was a toss to me. My bad. But yeah, it was great.